Alrighty, welcome to the Lock on Edge, Ryan Locklear, interviewing Mr. Derek Pearson. Mr. Derek, how are you?
I'm good. Thanks for having me.
Oh, no, thanks for, I don't know if it's as weird as it is in my head, but the way I see it in my head is my mama messaged me, she messaged you, and then out of the blue, you're just like, oh, okay, sure.
Well, it's not weird. That's how this works. I was in your shoes, so I understand.
Yes, sir. Well, I'm in a part of a bunch of podcast groups and stuff like that, and one of the most common questions is, how do you get people to be your guest? And I just answered honestly. I was like, I asked people, and apparently that was like, I mean, that like lit light bulbs in people's, you know, head. They're like, what do you mean you ask? And I was like, I ask, and if they say yeah, they say yeah. They say no, well, they just say no, and I ask somebody else.
You can never hear yes if you don't ask. That's the simplest truth of this thing.
Yes, sir. So one of the things that I actually wanted to talk to you about is your love, Prince. I watched your video for TED today, and like you became hero. Like that is, I don't know how that thing could have been any prettier. But before we get into your love, Prince, do you want to talk about the DP and Steven show on 93.7 and a little bit about you?
Well, that's the new gig here in Lincoln, Texas. We highlight and focus covering the Nebraska Cornhuskers athletic department, sports in general, but mainly the Cornhuskers and what's going on with them. I've been here for 3 weeks, so it's a new gig here. I've been in this so long, I don't know how long I've been in this. I've been doing this a long time.
Well, I will tell you that I Googled your name when I was first told about you, and there's a whole lot of stuff, and I'm not trying to be rude, but I could spend my whole life trying to look up stuff about you because you have been a busy, busy man. You know, from coaching to the radio show to your nonprofits. I mean, you're in there. you're a busy, busy man.
Well, I think I've been blessed. I know. I've been blessed. I've been blessed to wear a lot of hats and travel the country, travel the world. Every different version of me was affected by every previous version of me. Everything you've done in your life to this point leads you to the next thing. I'm really good at paying attention. You know, as an athlete, as a coach, as a broadcaster, as a dad, I'm constantly learning. And so sometimes you evolve. And I've evolved into a lot of different things over the stretch. I'm lucky. More than anything else, I'm lucky and I'm blessed.
Well, it one thing I like about it is it doesn't seem to me, which we'll get to here in a second, but it doesn't seem to me like you took your blessings and like put them under your hat and, you know, you just hold them there. Especially when it gets to what we're about to talk about, it seems like you really reached out. But when I post this, I'm going to send a link to the TED Talks that you did or the TEDx that you did. When I post this video, so people can go and watch it, see what I'm talking about. But before you get, before we talk about the Love Prince, in the beginning of your TED video, you started talking about your childhood, but you didn't get into it. And after watching it, I was like, okay, I really want to know some more about that. So you want to, because you said you had what, 8 kids in your family?
Yeah, there were 4 boys, 4 girls. Again, and you know, we weren't rich. We were poor, and we lived in a small house. And there's a really cool neighborhood, full of culture and faith and love. It was just a very comfortable neighborhood to live in. We didn't know that we didn't have much. We thought we had everything. But as you grow, the world kind of exposes itself to you that, hey, it's a little bit bigger than your house on your street. I was bused. I was one of the first group of folks who was bused. So I was picked out of a predominantly black school, sent to a predominantly white school. You've got to learn to adjust. You got to learn how to cope. And I learned early that the world is full of really good people. It's full of not so good people, but the good people are louder and they're more consistent. And if you've ever felt pain, like somebody mistreated you or that somebody didn't see you, when you grow out of that, you never want to make anybody feel like they're not seen or they're not heard. And, you know, there was a man in that house who was my stepfather. He raised me. He taught me how to be a man. My mom taught me how to be a human, how to be a great person. But my stepfather taught me how to be a man. And then around him, there were all these coaches. I started playing ball when I was young. Everybody in my family was athletic. But these coaches, this community of coaches who, again, filled in the gaps. They filled in the stories. They filled in the love, like spaces where love was missing. These coaches would, you know, wrap their arm around you and tell you it was going to be all right and tell you what you need to know. I was an athlete early, pretty early. I knew that sports, I loved sports as much as anything other than my family. I was smart in school, but I wasn't applying myself. But my brain was always on and I was learning whatever was in front of me. So comes to find out later in my life in the journey that not only did I have three brothers and four sisters, but that I have more brothers and sisters, which is a whole nother part of my story. And your mom, it fits a little bit of what your mom went through with her recent life and finding out not only who you are, but where you come from, who you come from. And I found out who my biological father was, and I found out where a lot of my things happened in the 55th year of my life. So there are more brothers, more sisters, more cousins, and a lot more love. And you understand that when love comes and it's not genetic love, it can root you. It can really get to the heart of you. And if you're paying attention and you're open to it, it's going to change the way you love. So yeah, that's where I'm from.
Yes, sir. And I don't know if I don't know if I told you about me and Becky, did I? And Brett and the whole, you know, all 15,000 kids that they have.
Yeah.
But did I tell you?
Well, she told me. And
oh, okay.
Yeah, she told me. So I knew that when you had the nerve to ask me, I have to sit down and talk to you. I like to live by the words, what are the odds? And it's what are the odds that any of us are ever here? When we're here, we're always put here at the right time in the right place. And every time, if you remember that you're a miracle, you'll pay attention to the people who cross your path and you'll be open to it. And you think, what are the odds, right? That me, a little black kid from just outside of DC in Virginia, would ever meet your mom who's from Australia, and we meet in a time and place. And yeah, years later, she meets you and then we meet. So what are the odds that you and I ever meet? But we're here for a purpose. We're supposed to meet each other. And that's how important all this stuff is to us.
Yeah, so I'm glad you see that, because that shows how important and how involved you are with the Love Prince by you saying that, because if you don't look at circumstances and situations that count as blessings, then you can't truly love something. And, you know, for the people that don't know, me and Daniel were in basic training together, and we connected like brothers. And so I met Becky and Brett right after we graduated basic training. And I graduated in September of 2009, and it just stuck. Like we just couldn't be separated, me or that family. And for the last almost 12 years or 11 years that I've known him, that it's like I was born and raised there. And, you know, I know everybody there. They call me their brother, and, you know, I call them brother or sister. So that the reason why I bring that up is because of what I'm going to get to when you talk about how you handle your athletes and some of the things you did. So we'll, before I get into your TEDx video, do you want to talk about how you and Love Prince got together?
Yeah.
Like how y'all came about.
Yeah, it's a weird thing. And you're a creative guy, you know, to do this show, you've got to see things that not only are in front of you, things that aren't. And then one night, you know, late night, as late night thinkers do, an idea comes across and in my head. And I've always kind of lived this way, but it made it more pronounced and more out loud, which was if our time here on the planet, you know, everybody has a carbon footprint. Everybody talks about a carbon footprint. So your impact on everything you touch, everything you use in your time on this earth affects everything after you touch it, and then everything after you're gone. But that didn't seem personal enough to me. And it seemed to me that to make it personal, if we do this right, it should be a love print. It should be that everything we touch and interact with should be better after we touch it and after we engage with it. And in order for that to happen, we have to leave it so covered in love that nothing else can stick. So the paths that we cross with, right, people we cross paths with, if we love them, they are better. They are better than we found them. And we're better after they found us. Love requires action. You can love somebody, but if there's no action to tie that in, then you've wasted the most powerful thing on the planet. And action requires love. You can be busy, but if it's not love-based and it's not moved by love, you're not accomplishing much. So I figure love and action together, one requires the other. If you, in fact, do it, the next thing that you do with love attached to it, because you love it or you love the person you're doing it for, you're both better for it. And you're so covered in love that nothing else can stick. Now, you met a family during hard times. Like, you're separated, folks are separated, and you're going through tough stuff. But somebody loved you. Somebody loved on you. And once you've been loved on properly, once you've been loved on authentically, you're never the same. You're never the same. And you know what real love feels like. You know what real love sounds like. You know what real love acts like. So when somebody approaches you now, you know whether there's love attached to it, because you'll say, this doesn't feel like love. This doesn't sound like love to me. So Love Prince was things that I did in coaching, things that I did in life. And I wasn't always this person. So let's be clear. I was not, there are no angel wings in that. But in order to learn what you're supposed to be, you have to learn what you're not supposed to be. And there are things I did in my past that I'll never be able to crack, but I can make sure that I don't repeat them. And those are messages. All the mistakes I made in my life, I say, I tell for my daughter, for my grandson, for my wife, for the kids I coach, and the people I coach with, I made those mistakes so they don't have to. It's much easier for me to say, I've been down that road before, don't go. And that's a love print. A love print is the next thing you do, which is this thing, that we love it and we'll both be better after we're done. And once it's done, your love print will be left on me, mine will be left on yours, and ours on anybody that watches this, if we do it right.
Yes, sir. And see, one of the things that I talked about, and we'll get into the TEDx now, is in the beginning, which I'm gonna let you comment on, but in the beginning, you asked everybody a question, and it's like, what are you here for? Like, I guarantee you, it was something to the effect of, I guarantee you're not here to talk about superheroes. Well, you didn't think you was here to talk about superheroes, but you are. And when you got into it, you know, I'm a big superhero fan, and people don't understand. I've always been a superhero fan for your version of what a superhero is, not the version of a comic book author. It's more of how about this, Mr. Derek? How about you explain what you explained in the video as far as standing in front of the mirror, standing up with your chest out, you know, and like that whole spiel. It's a lot more than you do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, let me correct you first. You said I'm a big superhero fan. The correct thing is that you're a big superhero.
Right.
The thing that you're doing is to help people. The people who are looking at this, they're coming to you for love. That's why they're here. They know something good's going to happen when they call out to you. When they send up your bat signal, they know you come running. They know something good's coming. That thing when you were in service, right? You're training and you're tired. You're beat down. You're worn down. And there are times you want to give it up and times you want to walk away. But what each of us do on a daily basis, sometimes several times a day, is at our lowest, we remember why we're there. We remember why we're doing what we're doing. And it's the thing that in your military picture, right? When they take the picture, you get out of boot camp. The chest goes out, chin goes up. There's a bit of pride. And at that moment, you love yourself and you love every reason why you did this, every reason why you went through it. Every morning before you go to work, you're tired, you're sleepy. You sit on the edge of the bed or you're leaning on the sink in the bathroom. You take a deep breath and then you push off because you know why. You're about to do what you're about to do. You know why it matters. You know who it benefits. You know who it's good for. It's love of self. It's love of family. It's love of community. It's love of country. That's the difference between a hero and a not hero, is that a hero pushes back to do something really good for somebody else. You get up and you go to work, not for yourself. You go to work for all the people that are relying on you and for the job that you do. When you get up and you complete everything that goes on in that day, in your day, you exhale. The two words that come to mind are, well done. And it's never about you. This podcast is never about you. It's about the message that you're giving people. And people will come running back to your podcast because they know something good. When I go to the lock on everything, I'm going to get something good. You are a big superhero. And now when you go forward, you're going to remember that each podcast is an opportunity for you to do something for other people. Maybe tell their story. Maybe change their message. Maybe make them feel better about what they're doing. Maybe you'll just occupy them and make them smile or make them laugh. You'll let them know it's okay. And they're not alone. They're not by themselves. Somebody shares their thoughts. Somebody shares their idea. That's heroic to me. That's what this is all about.
And see that, I think that's the reason why when I see people that complain about the situation that they have. I don't know if my mama told you, but I went to school to be a minister. And so faith is really big for me. Okay. But I had a chaplain tell me one time that I had way too many sharp edges that I need to file down before I be a chaplain, especially in the civilian world. And one of the reasons why is because I don't feel sorry for anyone. If someone's in a bad situation, I can I can understand the person. I can understand the situation that they're in, but I always see a way for that person to get out, even if that person don't see a way to get out. So I can't look at a situation, and that's the reason why I want to talk to you about the video that you did with and what you do with athletes, because when you see someone and you see a way out, especially as a child, they won't see it. And it's your job, as you said in your video, as a leader, to show them. So and as one of the examples is you got one with one of your athletes and you told them that they're going to have to do better in school. They're going to do this. They're going to do that. And they're like, oh, well, I'm smart enough. I'm good. And you're like, yeah, but you're the leader. So what about the dumbest person? What about the slowest person? What about the weakest person they need? And like you said, when you do something for somebody else, it makes a difference. And see, my childhood wasn't the perfect, you know, it wasn't the best, but my goal has always been to make sure, and I'm going to use your word, okay, always make sure that my love print is that my children start one step from where I started from. I don't want my children to start where I started from, and I don't want my children to start behind me. So whether I have someone that wants to stop me because I'm a male or because of my race or because that, you know, how I was brought up, it's not going to stop me, because the goal, like you said, is for my children. My children is what I fight for. That's what I struggle for. That's what I joined the Army for. That's what I deployed for. That's the, like you said, waking up and push off the sink. It's not for me, because if it was for me, I promise you I'd be doing something a whole lot different, Mr. Derek. Yeah, I mean, we're just going to do something else. And when I saw your video and you talk about what you did with these young men, and I don't know if you work with females too, but it's really most importantly for young men, because in the society we're in today, being a male is not okay. Being masculine is not okay. And then on the opposite side is men aren't taught to love, because the emotion of love is mixed up, which I know in the Greek language words for love. In our English language, we have one. And a lot of the time, the word love is a sign of weakness. But I know as a football coach that, you know, you may have loved athletes, but they may not have always thought that you loved them. You know, especially when they did something.
It's purposeful. A lot of people play sports or go to school or work for various reasons. They're never always the same. And I'll tell you this. Whether it's male, female, young, old, black, white, blue, brown, love is the best part of us. That's really what it means. And the Love Print logo, and I don't know if you can see it on my shirt, but it's a hand and a heart.
Oh, I like that.
It's a hand and a heart. The hand is action. The heart is love. Mm-hmm. Together, again, separately, they're great. But together, you can accomplish anything. If you love and you're willing to action on it. And people sometimes are given the wrong message that, well, as a man, I have to be busy, but I can't. Love is soft. No, love is the most powerful thing that exists. Love, as a person of faith, you've been told that God is love. And mm-hmm. I don't know how any of that could ever be bad if you love yourself, you love why you're here, you love what you're moved by. So I don't buy into that men are allowed to be masculine. I think whoever's giving the message that love isn't masculine doesn't know what love or masculine is. Because some of the strongest people that I've ever met, most of the strongest people I've ever met were women. They're strong mm-hmm. men in my life. But there are strong women in my life who went through a whole lot because they loved everybody around them. And with players and young people, sometimes I have to find out first why are you playing football? Why are you playing baseball? Why are you playing basketball? And sometimes it's to fill a space. It's a space that love is supposed to occupy, and it doesn't. Well, if you come to me with that and I find out pretty early that love is why you're doing this, we're going to get along just fine. I can coach somebody who wants to be loved. Somebody who wants to be angry and has venom, something else has filled those spaces. It's not love. I can battle and try to outlove whatever venom and poison is in them, whatever negative thing they have in that space. Some players just need a coach, a person, another human being to love them strong enough that they start to believe in it. Most of the people that are angry people just don't know what love is. They never felt it. They don't know how to give it because they never received it. So coaching to me isn't as much about the plays and the X's and O's. Coaching to me is about loving people using the whole mantra behind Love Prince is loving and learning through sports. If I'm in front of 100 guys, that's 100 people that I can love. Each of them love me, but I get to love 100 people and I get 100 pieces of love back every time I love. Every time I show up, I get 100 to 1. I keep winning. I keep winning. And that's that's your unit, right? When you do something good for your unit, your value goes up and you get it back unit fold for you to do something good again. Once you've done it, you never forget it.
Yes, sir. And I'm glad you brought that up, because the next thing I wanted to ask you about is you talking about how when you're picking a team, the first person's always the easiest. First round draft pick's always the easiest. The hardest one is who fills that 62nd spot in the NFL, or, you know, the last scholarship that you can give in a college, or, you know, the last walk-on position. Those are ones that are hard. And in your TEDx video, you said that you base that on love. And, you know, I'm not trying to get you to repeat yourself, but,
no,
you know, if you want to run, you know, elaborate on that.
Well, let's say that whatever that number is that you can keep around you. So for most basketball teams, it's 12 to 15 kids. For baseball, it's anywhere from 20 to 30, depending on the level you're coaching at and where you're coaching football. Sometimes you don't have a choice. Sometimes you have to keep everybody, and sometimes you have to make decisions. The people at the bottom of the talent pool often have the best reason to be there. And if I really know how to coach and I'm really in this for the right reason, I really want to coach for the right reason, the easiest person for me to coach is the best player, the most talented player. The guy that I'm going to affect the most is the last guy I choose, the guy who will play the least, but will put in the same amount of time, energy, and love as the most talented player. That person is going to stand next to me during games. He's going to stand next to me during practice. He's going to have the worst practice every day. The best, most talented player has the best practice every day. They have the most fun. The player who's on the other end of that spectrum has the toughest day every day. He never gets the payoff because he's not going to play as much. The top guy knows it. They know they're going to play. They know they're going to get the cheers. They're going to get their name announced. But the guy at the bottom of the roster spends the same amount of time at practice. They have the same academic requirements. And they're going to have the most bruises. at the end of the day from the best player. So who do I want next to me as a coach? I want the person who wants to be there for the right reason, because they love it. And what happens is they get better. I've never had a player who started the season as the least talented player ever finish the season as the least productive player. That never happens. They always improve because there's more room for them to improve and there's more space for them to elevate. But we both get the most from it. To get a kid that I had a kid at one of the high schools that I coached at that showed up for the first day of scrimmages wearing his Sunday church shoes with his uniform. He didn't know any better, and he didn't have any other choices. This young man started the last two games for us and had RBI hits and made a diving catch.
Mm-hmm.
That means as much to me as the kids I've had who went to Air Force Academy, Naval Academy, West Point, otherwise, because I know where he started. Like, I'm not a believer in you won the genetic lottery, so you're standing on third base. You're not doing the same thing as the kid who started at home place, bunted, or got hit by a pitch, had to steal second, had to steal third too. You're at the same place. You had different paths to get there. It took each thing took a different thing. I can love them both, and I should.
Yes, sir. And see, that's to me being the person that is, like we said, in that last spot, that is a more realistic image of the majority of people in our society. But, you know, when people say something like equality, they're not saying what you're saying, whereas they're going to do the same practice. They're going to do everything. Theirs is just going to suck a little bit more.
It's equity.
It's
equity. You can take,
right.
You could have three people of different sizes standing behind a fence. The fence is 6 foot tall. If you're not 6 foot tall, you don't get to see what's over the fence. You're at disadvantage automatic, and there's nothing you can do about it. You go and find two boxes. If the tall person stands on the box, you haven't done everything for everybody. Equity is the tallest box goes to the shortest person. The in-between box goes to the other person. Everybody gets the same advantage. It took nothing from one or the other. And now you're at a place where you all can have the same experience.
At Ruck Up Podcast, we take a little bit of a different approach. We take industry professionals from law enforcement, military, security, and outdoors enthusiasts all around the world, and we hear their story. So let's hear it.
Attack or infiltration or suspected infiltration, and we have to be ready to...
Allegedly massacred by the Crown Prince, and I was there not to do with that. I arrived the day after.
Check us out at our website at ruckupmedia.com.
Does anyone remember having to study multiplication facts in like the third grade? Well, I absolutely hated it. Up until a teacher showed me how to use flashcards, I felt like my entire world had changed. They were easy to carry around, and I could study pretty much anywhere with anyone. As I got older, though, life became more fast-paced. Flashcards, they never changed. That is until agapeflashcards.com got their hands on them. These are not your grandma's run-of-the-mill flashcards. These flashcards not only allow you to become strong in the Word of God by empowering you with 100 of the most powerful Bible verses, but also support those who battle against human trafficking around the world. To learn more about these sleek, durable, educational, human trafficking fighting flashcards, check out agapeflashcards.com. Don't forget to tell them the lock sent you.
That's what's required in this thing, is that You can put people out there to do the job, and you know in your company that there are folks who there are better shooters than others. There are guys who are faster. There are guys who were stronger. We still haven't figured out how to measure heart. We haven't figured out how to measure love. We don't know what the tall guy and the short guy are fighting for. You know that there's some short soldiers who are the baddest dudes in the company, because they had more to fight for. They knew why they were fighting. And that made all the difference in the world.
And see, with that, Mr. Derek, is, you know, like you said, you have people in your company that are the best shot. Well, when emotions run in and stress is high, the person that's the worst shot may become the best shot because they shoot like crap when they're still, but when they're under pressure, they still shoot like crap. But the best shot, the best shooter, when they get stressed out or their heart starts bumping, they don't maintain the same shooting abilities of that raw talent, like the person who just sticks with the fundamentals. And that's
pressure. Pressure bust pipes. That's the phrase. Pressure bust pipes.
Yeah. And see, one thing I like about this, Mr. Derek, is that we don't have the time for it because you're a busy man. Maybe we'll do it later. But if you take a situation in life, and almost any situation you can think of, you can use a sports reference to explain it, and whether it's regardless of what sport it is. And like you just said, with equity versus equality, you know, you just use something as simple as sports. It's, hey, I got this kid that can run, you know, a 4 second 4:40, a kid that can run, you know, a 7 second 4:40, but I know the fast kid doesn't try. The slow kid, he tries. He's not good, but you're not going to get that young in the stop. You know, he's going to keep. Am I wrong, Mr. Derek? And
heart,
I mean, that's
matters.
What we're kind of getting to.
Heart matters. Preparedness matters. Want to matters. Like, if you know what you're supposed to do, have you practiced it? Have you prepared for it? Have you been practices? I have a coaching buddy, and he was the one that just really forced into me that you have to practice in game scenarios. Don't just practice game skills. Practice at the pace that you're going to play at, because it doesn't make sense for you to shoot 100 free throws a day without running first. Because bad free throw shooters miss because they're tired. Their pulse rate is elevated. Their eyes have been bouncing in their head from running. So you have to shoot free throws as though it's a game situation. Go run four or five up and downs, and then while you're sweating, calm your heart rate down and make the two free throws. Make them matter. Make them keep competitive. Practices have to be competitive. It's a lot of stuff like that. I mean, you know how this is. When you're doing a podcast, the first time you do it, it's never what it was in your head. The more you do it, the more settled, calm, and comfortable you're going to be in it. That's humanity. That's in everything we do, right? First time you hold a gun, your pulse rate's through the sky. Once you're comfortable running a drill, once you're comfortable setting up a meeting, once you're comfortable asking somebody to come on your podcast, the next time becomes easier. The next time becomes more human nature. And then it becomes second nature, becomes muscle memory. It becomes a part of your comfortable movement. Trust that, because you have to. The only way to learn to walk is to walk. The only way to get faster is to run more. That's how this works.
Yes, sir. So I don't know if you, I know you're a busy guy, so I don't know if you've actually got a chance to listen to some of my episodes, but there was one, and I wanted to ask you a question about it, because it's important to me, and it's something that really hits home to me. So I don't know if you know, but I've been a martial artist since I was 14, and when I was about, I think I was 17 or 18 years old, I joined a church that had a cage in the basement of it. And we had a whole church fight club, and it was awesome. And, you know, we did our thing. But there was times when we would have to stop fighting each other, and which we were primarily men. Okay. We didn't have women in our club at this point of time yet. But there were just times when we would stop and we would have to have, you know, the person that's the trainer or, you know, the oldest dude in the group that would have to play dad. They're like, look, I can't be your coach right now. I have to be father figure. I have to do this because, like you said in the beginning, I've been there and I've done it. And at a point you're like, okay, you came to me as an athlete. You came to me as this, but now that connection's there. The love is going back and forth. And now you don't need a coach right this second. You need a father because you may not be a number one draft pick in an NFL. But like you said on your video of your captain that joined the police force, you know, what you did stuck with him because you came to him as a coach, and then he realized later you actually came to him as a parent and as a strong masculine male, and you didn't take his crap, but he didn't see it that way until he walked up to your wife and was like, hey, we love this guy.
Well, that's what love is. At whatever level, I like one of my favorite phrases is sometimes it's our responsibility to be the adult in the room. Sometimes we just have to say we can't do this childish thing that's been allowed before. I'm here now. And once we know better, we have to do better. But I look at it this way for all of this. With my captains, it was just a matter of saying that he had great things in him and just to tell him, I know what greatness looks like. You love this thing the right way. You love people the right way. Don't not love them. Like this was love your right. Teammates. Like you want to lead them. In order to lead them, you have to love them. That was it for me all the way. So as a captain of my team, and to this day, anybody that's been a captain on any of the teams that I've coached in any part of my life, and a lot of these captains are now coaches, college coaches, high school coaches as well, but I still call them captain because that was an honor. They honored me by leading my teams. They took the responsibility of leading my teams. And then they would go on and have full understanding that at some point, the love that was given to them is going to be required for the next person, whether it was their son, their daughter, their wife, their mother, family. They were going to understand that sometimes love is telling you what you need to hear and not what you want to hear. It's telling you what you need to know versus what you think already.
And see, the reason why I ask you that, Mr. Derek, is because, you know, that we have a lot of young men that are being raised, especially in our minority communities. And I don't know if you know, but I'm mixed. So I'm Native and white. So, my dad wasn't like that either. So, but a lot in our minority groups, there isn't a dad. There isn't someone like you said to take that love, because if we look biblically for a second, the mom is the lover, the carer, the nourisher. That's the one that shows the love that, I guess you'd say more elegant for a man. That's the more the softer love. Whereas a father, they're supposed to love, but it's more like you said. It's not abrasive and rude. It's more of a kind of to a direct point. And when you have a mother and father together, it's supposed to blend beautifully. And it's almost simultaneously as you can't tell really who's doing what. But when you remove the father out of the equation, then then you can tell there's something missing. And I know for a lot of young men, and I focus on a girl. I'm not a female, so I don't want to explain something I don't know about. But you have a lot of young folks that don't have these leaders in their life, and sports is the only way they're going to get it. And that's why Love Prince is something that I fell in love with when I started reading about it and watching. It's because you're taking these young men, these young athletes that don't have a leader in their life, and these coaches that partner with you and do these different things with you, they build these kids to be young adults. Like when you set a standard, you know, the mom or the dad or whoever they live with may be like, okay, make whatever grade you want to, I don't care. But when they go to Coach Derek, they know Coach Derek wants straight A's. You know, the parent or whoever, you know, may let them stay up till 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, but they know Coach Derek told them their bedtime is 9 o'clock. And that's what it's going to be.
Well, I think about it this way. I try not to tell parents how to be parents. I don't tell them how to love. I don't tell them the rule, but I have the same rule, is that I don't want them to come to my dugout or my basketball bench locker room to tell me how to coach. Because then if you do, mm-hmm. I'm going to come to your house and sit on the couch and tell you how to be a parent. We can do right. it together. The community makes it better. And if I show them that, listen, I'm never going to tell your child to do something that's not good for them. And that trust has to be earned.
Right.
And there has to be some tracking for it. And let me answer something else you said. You talked about minorities and people not being in place. I don't think that's the case at all. I think it's different. Mm-hmm. But what we have, you and I have the ability to simply say, whoever it is, whatever situation it is, some of the greatest circumstances that I had to overcome were kids from households with two parents in them, where the mom, mm-hmm. you know, single moms loved all the way. Single dads loved all the way. And it wasn't a race or ethnic thing. Sometimes it's just circumstance. And I'm talking about, right. I coached in Utah and Carolina and DC, Virginia, Texas. All of it is based on this. Whatever your circumstances are, I can love you. I don't know whether you have one parent, no parents, two parents, four parents. I don't know. I don't know if you have straight parents, gay parents, Baptist parents, Christian parents, Muslim parents. That's not my place. God didn't ask for my help with that. It's my job. It's my job. And it's my choice to love them
right.
for every hour that I have them. And that keeps it simple for me.
And I mean, and it is. And the reason why I bring it up is obviously I'm being with more personal experiences rather than right. of mine, rather than saying what you're. You know, what your personal experiences
are. That's why I want to say to you, young man, you have the opportunity to love a lot of people in this forum. Hopefully, as you're loving all of the people who watch, that you're reaching a place where you love yourself because you're worthy.
Right.
Because you're worthy. Doesn't matter whether you know your parents or not, you're worthy. Put your cape on, dude, and expect to do this, because this is what you're here for.
And I mean, it, like I said before, it's just all about, it's crazy when people talk about sports and it's throwing a ball, kicking a ball, hitting a ball, whatever it may be. But we sit down and have a conversation like this, the whole life experience comes back to it. You can take a child and, like you said, all you had to do is ignite your captain's fire. And as you said, his cape's going to open up in the White House. And you say that because it's a challenge. Go do it. So it really more the way I see it is that when we get in these situations, there's always that one person that we can go to. And one of my favorite chaplains always told me that the mentor can't pick the mentoree. The mentoree has to pick the mentor. Mm-hmm. Because if you can't force someone to accept you if they're not going to. But like that captain that you talked about when he told your wife, and you can correct me, but you know, he said he didn't want to like you, but whether he knew it or not, he chose it. I mean, something happened between, which we know it, but something happened in him to where he went from, I don't want to like this guy, to one day he was like, oh shoot, I actually do like this guy, how much I think I don't.
I talk to different schools and groups, companies all the time. And in one of those that was captured, I was talking to a school in Texas, and he captured a moment where I'm just like everybody who's watching this. We're more alike than we're unlike. And what happened to me was the same thing that happened to you. Love happens. Mm-hmm. Somebody decides to love you enough to pay attention. Somebody loves you enough to be present. Somebody loves you enough to tell you what you need to know. Somebody loves you enough to pat you on the back. Somebody loves you enough to say, well done. Somebody loves you enough to point you in the right direction, or to point out this amazing trait in you. That's how it happens. That every day he showed up, I was constant in loving him and telling him, look, man, you're going to be something great because you already are. You already are. So that's what, through all of us, I don't know what part of humanity forces people or allows people to listen to people who hate them more than listen to the people who love them. It's a humanity thing. And if I could, whoever figures that out will win the Nobel Peace Prize.
Well, biblically or religiously, we would call that the devil. But I do understand exactly what you're saying as far as why if I tell you I love you and, you know, you go down the street and someone's like, I hate you. In 20 years from now, you may forget that, you know, I said I love you, but you're not ever going to forget the time that person said that he hated you.
Unless you know through your experience, history, and through pure volume and repetition.
Right.
That not love is a lie. That's you. They can tell me you hate me. I don't believe you. I have a saying that I tell people all the time. This is something I tell people all the time, right? I walk into a room of football players, right? 100 bulls, right? And I walk in and I get close. And pay attention now, right? Pay attention. And I ask them to look me in the eye. And I said, I want you to remember one thing and look at my face when I do this. My smile is undefeated. So is yours. Never forget that.
Yeah. I mean that does make a lot of sense, and that's what our society needs. That's what our world needs. That's what everybody needs is for love, and it's a genuine thing. It's something that you give without trying to force it to come back. You know, and that's one reason why I'm a big man of faith. As you, like you said, God is love, and God gives us love. We don't have to ask for it. We don't have to beg for it. We don't earn it. We don't do anything for it. It's there. it's going to be there whether we like it or not. It's not going to go anywhere. It's been forever, and it will be for always.
You love what you made. You love what you made.
Right. Right. Well, I mean that's true, and that's the reason why, you know, I relate everything, like you being a coach, to back to being a parent, because when you look at the father as a father, then things just make sense. If you look at your baseball coach as a father, as a parent, then you understand why when you're acting stupid during a ball game, you're going to do suicides the next day at practice. You know why when you do something stupid, he's going to grab you by the face mask and start yelling at you, you know, like, because it's like an emotion, but he loves you and he knows you can do better and he believes in you. He needs you to do it. And I don't know if it makes sense because I'm not a coach, but
it makes perfect sense. I'm not a grab by the face mask out of anger guy. I'm a grab out of face mask to tell you how great you are.
Right. I got you.
Right. I'm not. There are pictures of me online with big dudes. Listen, man, you are something special. That's what that's for. Why would you get in that space and have that kind of trust and provide venom? I don't get that. All of this to say, the thing about most coaches and most educators, most mentors of groups, is that there's some sacrifice. And as a dad, I had to learn late in life that I needed to love my own the way I love my players. Because it's different.
Right.
It's different. And I also know that I'm able to get to people who I'm not their dad because I'm not their dad.
Right.
Right. Sometimes it requires somebody else to love yours to get them right. And mm-hmm. My fatherhood story is not one of perfection. I, in full disclosure, I'm a much better father now than I was because she made me a better father.
Right.
Right. She loved me enough to forget my flaws and to say, okay, well, I see you loving everybody else. In truth, all of that love belonged to hers, but through her blessing, she allowed me to share them with other people. So yes, it's my job to be there for other people's kids the way I hope other people are there for mine.
Yes, sir. And that's all I'm going back to is understanding the word love, and that's why I broke it down so no one misconstrues. And that's one thing I absolutely hate about the English language is when you have to use the word in context to figure out what the person's talking about. You can't just say the word and they immediately know what you're talking about.
Well, but there should be an action that's attached to it. There should be a love-filled positive action tied to it. You can't hit somebody and say I love you. You can't yell at somebody and tell them you love them. The two don't match. And when they don't match, it's a reason. You know what love sounds like. You know what love acts like. All I ask for people to do is the next person you talk to, that you give them your full self. Hear them. Just hear them. See them. And love will be attached to it. You can't love what you're connected to. You can't hate what you're connected to. You just can't do it.
I think the only thing, and I know you told me you'll give me an hour. I've been a little bit over it, but it's the one word we didn't use is selfless, and it has to be selfless love. It can't be conditional. It can't be. It just has to be selfless and it has to be pure, like you said, because if I'm only like a prime example, I've heard people say that they're not going to respect someone until they earn it. And I was like, okay, well, you're going to have a miserable life. I was like, because you will miss out on amazing opportunities to meet people because everybody should have your trust. And then when they break that trust, then they got to rebuild it. But you can't walk into a place knowing nobody and being like, I'm not going to trust you until you show me that I can, that I can trust you, because no one's had the opportunity. If you don't have the opportunity, which you can tell me if I'm wrong, Mr. Derek, but zero and zero will always make zero. I don't know of an instance where, you know.
But I can add two. Love adds two. Mm-hmm. The other thing subtracts, to take away, which is why I'm so willing to love. That's why I'm so willing. That's why I'm capable of love, because there were times when I didn't and I lost. I lost. And I learned. That's the blessing and the grace for me, is that I learned from it. There are people who go through it and they just lose and they don't learn the lesson and they repeat it. I like to love myself enough to learn. I'm important. You're important. If you make a mistake, learn from it. That's through all this stuff. And then when you're done, love yourself anyway.
Yes, sir. So before I let you go, Mr. Derek, I really do appreciate you taking the time. I hope you don't hold it over my mama's head too much that you did her a solid.
She's amazing. She's amazing. Yeah, we'll do. You can call me. We'll do it again. One thing I understand is somebody wants to put something like this together. Your heart's in the right place. Somebody had to do my first show with me, my second show, my fifth show, my 10th show. Even now, when I call somebody, right? When I call somebody and say, hey, do my show, that's a statement out loud that when somebody asks me to do theirs, that I say yes. So I'll say yes.
Yes, sir. Well, if you want to, I would like to know what your goals for Love Prince is, how people can help you reach that goal, how people can get that awesome little shirt that you're wearing, because I'm really going to talk to you about getting one because I like that.
There we go.
But basically, what is I guess basically say, how can we help you make your love bigger? How do we get you to where we can get your organization in basic, you know, everywhere to help kids, help share just love?
Well, I mean, so there's the website that you've been showing there, loveprince.us. There's stories, there's content. I do speaking engagements. I'll travel around the country and speak to folks. As a matter of fact, your mom asked me to try to get to Indianapolis. And now that I'm in Nebraska, I'm a little bit closer and my schedule settles down a bit. Be able to do that. I want to come and talk to folks. If you have a group, if you have a team, if you have a company that you want somebody to come talk to. I've spoken in churches too. So I've got a little minister in me, proudly tell. Folks can buy this. There are bracelets on there as well. The bracelets, shirts, hats. They're on the website. Just go to Love Prince and go to shop. I've got a Facebook page with a group. Go ahead and add yourself. You can follow me on any of the social media. It's all under Derek Pearson, the way I spell it, at Derek Pearson, Twitter, Instagram, etc. You can find me on Facebook. Reach out. You can shoot me a message. I answer them all. If you have an event and you want somebody to come set the room on fire, you give me a call.
Yes, sir. Well, I appreciate it, Mr. Derek, and I look forward to doing this with you again.
Absolutely. Reach out. Let me know when. Give your folks a hug for me, please.
Yes, sir. And same to you. This has been the Lock on Everything with your host, Brian Locklear.